That was one hell of a day. It's weird when you sift through free agency. You do those shows live. It's 3 hours yesterday, and you're kind of like, I'm at the forefront of the day. And we knew some stuff was coming, right? Tanev was already predetermined. Already knew the Domi signing was happening. Day keeps going on. Become Stolarz. Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Jani Hakanpää. And it appears that that's your new look Toronto Maple Leafs. I got James Rennell on the line. Good morning, James. Senior managing editor of The Athletic. Let's start with this. Is the heavy lifting done?
I would say the heavy lifting, yeah. I mean, they're going to continue to see if there's things they can swap in and out. I mean, on the weekend in Vegas, we were hearing again and again that Timothy Lilgren was on the block. So
even with that contract,
even with that contract getting done, that's like an asset management move as opposed to for sure that he's staying. You know, they weren't able to sign all of the right shot D that they wanted in free agency, obviously. So they had to pivot to plan. I don't know if it was B, C, or D, or how far down the list it was, but, you know, and they're going to continue to look at what they can do. I mean, there's obviously a hole up front, and they don't have a lot of cap space to fill it. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if at some point, you know, if they do find a taker for Lilgren at $3 million, all of a sudden that's, you know, $3 million plus the spare change that they've got left.
The only thing is that there's nobody left. Like,
no, but a trade.
Sure.
Trade, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, though, doesn't it feel at this point almost like the more realistic one that way is a challenge trade with Robertson for somebody?
Yeah, I don't think you can get hardly anything for Robertson. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that one you're just going to have to say to him, hey, there's going to be a little bit more opportunity this year. Look at our lineup. You know, come back and, you know, sign a one-year deal. And I wonder, I don't know. For what you're going to get for Robertson, I don't think it's worth trading him.
Buddy, that's the Nick Robertson story.
Well, for sure this year. I mean,
no, that's been the entire time. Is always, well, you can't trade him now because the value's too low, right? That's always been it. Is, hey, he doesn't – tell me, when has this not been true about Nick Robertson? Hey, his fit on the roster is kind of uncomfortable, but you can't replicate that level of goal scoring at that number. You don't want to give up on a young player too quickly. Look at the history of young players that haven't gotten an opportunity. Well, he's blocked. Well, there's no spot for him in the lineup that really makes sense. Well, again, you can't trade him for nothing. What's the value? It's through the floor. At some point, like, if I'm him, normally when players ask for trade requests, especially in this market, you know, if you're a fan of the team, you always side with the team and you go, well, you know, we don't want that loser here anyway. I think that's the sort of mindset you're supposed to have. When Robertson asked for the trade request and went, he basically put that out there a year ago at he wanted to play hockey. He produced to a level enough when he got opportunities that I think it merited at least a look, maybe a bit of a longer look at times. So if I'm him, I go, I just look at his situation and say, dude, this is the fairest trade request ever. Like, you just need a change of scenery. And Toronto probably, I don't know if they need it to. It's probably better to have him in the lineup. But where are you going to put him? You know, where is he supposed to play next year? I just don't see it. I feel as though this is kind of one of those situations where you go, stop with this asset management thing that really ultimately is turning into nothing.
Well, I mean, they're thin on the wing right now. I mean, if they can't make a trade, they don't have a lot of cap space, and they need some guys on left wing, but they weren't able to get Bertuzzi back. So I think there's more opportunity, and it's a new coach and a bit of a clean slate. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to go to Robertson and say, you know, we hear you.
Yeah.
Give us a chance. You know, give us a chance to play you a little bit more and one more year here.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is the story of yesterday to me. They improved their blue line, I think, because you have Chris Tanev now. You're just better. He's the best fit they've ever had next to Morgan Riley. There's reason to be I think, pretty optimistic about those two guys fitting together. Outside of that, it's a thinner team that I think is really rolling the dice in net. But the thing that seems to be, I think, missed in terms of the discourse surrounding, hey, did OEL get too much? And Hakanpää, where does he fit? And will Liljegren get put into this lineup? And what's going to happen with Robertson? And can Stolarz be a starter? Is that this is a team that every single season, come playoff time, struggles to score goals. And they got thinner up front. They have fewer guys that could put the puck in the net than I think any year before.
I agree. I don't know. I don't know what to add to that. I mean, you know, they essentially didn't do hardly anything at four. I mean, they brought Domi back, but that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they've got a whole bunch of forwards signed. Like, they've got enough guys to fill out the lineup, but it's, you know, is Bobby McMahon in your top six right now? I mean, you know, like, it's not pretty. So that's why, you know, you asked if they've got a big move coming. I don't think so, but maybe there's like a media move coming where they can switch some pieces around.
Well, and the other frustrating part for me is they go into free agency and Tree Living saying all the right things about the blue line. And yes, it needed addressing. And yes, Tanev is a very good fit on this team. And even at the term, and, you know, we can get into what your thoughts are on that signing in a second. But outside of that, like, the second priority to me, I guess, outside of net, blue line, net, and needing another centerman. And they bring back Domi, and I think everybody likes that signing because it's a fine number and it's on a good term, and everything about it is just, it's never going to hurt you, and you're getting a player who, if you accept what he is, you should be happy with it. But they're in the same position where you're going, wait, so is he playing in some kind of weird sheltered three hole where he's with a McMahon or a Robertson? Or is he back on the wing with Matthews, where that's where we saw him at his best? And then you're looking at center depth and saying, wait, it's again, worse than last year, unless you think Minton is going to come up and actually be able to fill one of those slots again. Like, you're back to going into training camp with, hey, can Fraser Minton be the 3C again? Like, I can't believe that they're back here.
I can. I mean, were you expecting them to get a center? I mean, there's hardly any available in free agency. You know, they weren't rumored connected to any of the centers. So, you know, I think they looked at it at the end of the day, and Domi was willing to take a little bit less than he could get on the open market, and he can play center and he can play wing. And that was the solution that they went with. So I guess I know there's a lot of fans frustrated. It sounds like you're frustrated.
I'm more so confused. I think I'm frustrated by the fact that at the end of this year, we got the media press conference of, hey, we understand that things need to change and that you can't keep doing things the same way, right? And then we're here and I'm looking at it and I kind of feel, I don't want to say bamboozled, but yeah, it's like Shanahan's still here. They swapped out a coach. The core four remains intact. Like, it's Morgan Riley with a different defense partner. And what, everyone's supposed to believe that Craig Berube is going to completely change a thinner roster than from a year ago? It just, there are so many holes remaining with this roster. And it's like, I can't believe it feels as though they're just doing the method of, well, we'll get through this year and hopefully it works out. We'll cross our fingers and maybe it does, and just get us to 2025 and we'll operate with the Tavares money and try to build the franchise with whatever money we get off of his contract moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be players that come up. I believe Nyes is going to be up. Wohl is getting a raise a year from now. If they're keeping Jake McCabe, they're going to have to give him more money. So, that Tavares money goes pretty quickly. And I don't know. I mean, like, there's not a lot that free agency was going to be able to do for them unless they moved out other salary. Like, they were never going to be that substantially different through free agency. I mean, I guess they could have, not signed Ekman Larson and put that into a forward and maybe brought in David Perron or something like that. I mean, the prices were really, really high, and the Leafs were in on a bunch of players that they just deemed the price to be too high on. And then, like I said, they had to go with plan B or C or D or however far down the list it was. And that's what the lineup is right now.
So let's do best and worst. What was the best signing to you for the Leafs? And then what was the worst?
Oh man. best. What was the best signing?
It's got to be Tanev, right?
I guess it's Tanev. Uh-huh. You know what I wanted to say on Tanev is, you know, he gets 4.5 for 6 years. Mm-hmm. How much did they save on the AAV by going 6 years? Like, who was going to give him $27 million over 4 or 5 years?
Well, I'm guessing that it was the Dallas situation was you're fighting against their taxation situation. I still need more clarity on this, though, because I'm always so confused about the ways guys can bury money and how this Tavares contract is actually, like, the CRA going after him with money. I need to do this summer, like, a true deep dive into what the actual differences are, because I'm starting to think that it's more a cost of living thing than a tax thing, the way that some of these guys can bury money. So, anyway, just a theory. It's not, I guess, not a theory, but something that I've been thinking a lot about. But I imagine that those other places were willing to kind of do a similar contract, right? Like Vancouver maybe was willing to do that exact same deal, and he would have taken the money if not for the slight advantage of wanting to be home. I think he was honest when he spoke yesterday, mentioning that he's about to have his second kid and he wants to have more familial support.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think it was about coming home. I'm saying is that, like, going long, I thought the cap hit was going to be lower. I thought it was going to be,
so did I,
you know, 3.9 or 4 or something like that. And then it's 4.5, and it's like, well, do you really have to do 6 years for that? So that's the only thing. Like, he's a really good player. He's what they need. You hope he doesn't decline. I mean, we've seen, you know, like Muzzin have to retire at a similar age because of his injuries, and we've seen TJ Brody turn into a pumpkin at a similar age, and with Tanev, you're just going to be, you got a 6-year deal, but you know, he was fantastic last year and in the playoffs. How many more years of that player do you get?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's like, how many years do you need for him to be this level of player for this to be a good contract? I would say 3.
Yeah.
But again, it's strange because I hate calling it this, but it really does feel like a bit of a punt year. If this is the team, I just don't see it. Like I don't know what the roadmap is to this team winning a Stanley Cup, because that's supposed to be the goal. And I'm not looking at this roster in front of me, because we still have cap friendly for apparently 3 more days of me being able to look at this thing. I don't look at the names and go, oh yeah, no, they got something here. I go, whoa, this is thin. This keeps getting thinner and thinner. And this is why you kind of nailed it with the Tavares thing, and why I think I am frustrated and why I think a lot of fans are frustrated. It's like every year they come in a free agency and there's this thing of, well, some money's coming off the books and they've got some money to play with. And then every year we're reminded that it's less than you think it's going to be. You know, it sounds great on paper when you go, oh, the Leafs have $11 million. And then you see how quickly that gets eaten up. And then you look at the rest of the roster and go, oh crap. All right, well, next year. And then you just said it. All right, Tavares is going to come off the books, and then other guys are going to need to get paid. And what? I don't think he's going to get... You just looked at what happened with the Stamkos situation, right? Like, he gets, what, was it $8 million a season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Tavares is going to be offered... The amount of money people think he's going to have to take or to stay here versus what I think the reality of that situation is going to be is a bit worlds apart.
We'll see. I think if you're the Leafs, you know, you do what Tampa did, and you're saying, here's the offer, and if you want to stay here, you know.
Yeah, so, of course you're doing that.
But if he walks, I mean, you talk about being thin at center with him. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
And look at who there was to bring in at center in free agency, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee that even if the Leafs have a lot of cap space next year, that they're going to be able to fill the holes in a way that improves them, you know? Mm. So I don't think they should look at this as a punt year. I mean, I think the thing probably you and I should talk about is, like, what could they have done differently in free agency? And, you know, I wonder if they took their pool of money, whatever it was, like that's 17, 18 million. I wonder if they should have just been really aggressive and gotten 2 really high impact difference making players instead of spreading it out the way that they did. So, and I think they were close to doing that, but they kind of backed away when they saw how high the prices were going on some of the players.
Okay. So who do you think was the primary guy that changed their opinion on that strategy?
I don't know about primary, but I know that they liked Matt Roy a lot.
Yeah.
I know they were pretty close there. Okay. So it could have been Tanev and Roy. And I guess the question is, do you like the Ekman-Larsson at 3.5, or would you be okay with Roy at 5.5 at another 2 million, and then that makes you tighter in some other areas.
So I thought about this, and to me, it's a no-brainer that you would have rather had Roy. The issue is, and where I think they may have gotten a little hung up on it, is the power play stuff. That they had they just finished a postseason where the power play ran dry again. And you got to come in, like Mark Savard's going to be here, but he's working with the same clay. And I think they needed another option. And we saw this with Tree Living last offseason, right? Everybody was pissed off about the Klingberg contract, and rightfully so, because I guess it could have been a nightmare had he stayed healthy, but they rolled that dice and he wasn't healthy enough to play at the NHL level. I think that the Ekman-Larsson part of this was they went, well, what else are we supposed to do? How are we going to materially change the power play?
I think that's the bad contract out of, you know, if we're talking about best contract, yes, worst contract, I think Ekman-Larsson is highly problematic. He turns 33 in 2 weeks. He was playing only 15 minutes a game on that playoff run for Florida.
Yep.
He's basically a third pair guy who can help you on the power play right now. And he got 4 years. And I think that that's going to, if it doesn't look bad in year one, it's for sure going to look bad in year two or year three. And so, you know, the good thing that they did with Klingberg is there's no term at all involved, yeah, in it, and it didn't really matter. It was easy to disappear. The Ekman-Larsson's not going to be easy to disappear, and, you know, I would be concerned that they're going to try and play him higher in the lineup than third pair, and we know what that looks like because it didn't work in Vancouver. So that's the really problematic deal for me, and I think it happened because they got close on some other names and then backed away over where the price was going, and I wonder if they could have found that money somewhere else.
I really don't like the contract. My first thought when it was signed, well, you can see my reaction because it's on YouTube, was when Elliot Friedman told me that Ekman-Larsson might get that money. And I was shocked because my guess would have been, oh, you know, OEL would be fine as a Leafs $2 million grab as a power play option who plays some sheltered minutes. Mm-hmm. I never thought it would be essentially double the price of and 4 years term. Again, I was blown away. My first real thought when I put some time into it was, so he's going to get bought out twice by two Canadian teams.
You're already in the bad place. It's the day after free agency.
I'm trying not to be, because I really do like the Tanev thing. And the more I think about Tanev, the more I keep trying to remind myself going, this is a really good signing, even though it's too long. Because ultimately, I think that this is going to be a situation where the last 2 years, either he's injured or he's done, and they bury this thing some way or another. I will say that I talked about Marlowe, how we all made that same assumption, and that if this guy wanted that kind of term and it wasn't about as much money up front, that would signal to me a little bit that this guy would like to see it through, that the guy loves to play. So I'm not ruling out the potential for down the line. He's like, no, I still want to play. But come that time, come 2028, like those are almost fake years to me. And what's $4.5 million going to be? And the likelihood of him being there, I don't care about it as much. I just don't. I think for him right now, $4.5 million in a market where, what did Lyubushkin get? $3.5 million?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know, the prices were wild.
Yeah, but that's what I mean is when he's making that kind of money, I look at Chris Tanev and say, oh yeah, you got a top pairing guy for $1 million more than Ilya Lyubushkin. You did a great job. I think that the Domi thing, it's important to keep guys that are good culture pieces that want to be here, that care about being here, and do provide an elite level skill. Like, he is a very, very talented player. And we saw last year that he can work with Matthews. And if you're talking about a year from now and what could happen with Mitch Marner, I do like that you have some insurance that you have an elite playmaker that can jump onto Austin Matthews' wing, who he really likes, that will keep him happy and will put a bunch of beautiful passes on his stick. So those two things I think are hawk and paw. I think that one's solid. Again, I hate using Lyubushkin as the benchmark for the bad contract, but you look at his deal and you say, well, yeah, hawk and paw. Like, I don't know why Dallas thought this was the better course of action. Like, they're both right shot, heavy guys that hit everything that moves. And you gave one guy $2 million more to be a depth guy. Like, I don't know. I liked Lyubushkin, I think, more than most, but no, that disparity between those two players makes zero sense to me. So I like those three things, and that's fine. But it just, I'm not moved by a Stolarz-Wohl combination. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it works out. I believe in Joe Wohl. I just don't believe in his health. I don't think OEL is going to come in here and be like so much better on the power play than Morgan Rielly that it's just undeniable, and now we feel as though that's not an issue for this team. I don't like his contract. I think it's 2 years too long at $1.5 million too much. And the Liljegren contract, I understand the asset management everyone keeps saying to me. I just don't think that Timothy Liljegren on a $3 million contract is an asset for you. Like, I don't view that as something that, ooh, wow, you had to have that. I just don't.
No, but their options were
let him
arbitration,
walk.
Yeah. Pay, or let him walk away. So yeah. You would let him walk away for nothing?
No.
Like a right shot D? When you, I mean, you just talked about what guys are signing for. Like, you know. I think they should have done the arbitration and just ate whatever the one-year deal was. That's what I would have done, because I think it would have been less than $3 million. But I think they were worried that when you do arbitration, you don't know what the number is going to be, and it's hard to plan around. And that happened to them last year. Like, I think they thought Samsonov was going to get $3 million in arbitration. It ended up at $3.5 million, and all of a sudden, when they got to training camp, they were $500,000 short, and they had to dump Sam Lafferty at the end of camp. So I think they were going for the certainty, and I think they'll still keep trying to move Liljegren, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess where I was going with all this, though, is I don't mind the contracts. Other than Ekman-Larsson, I don't mind them. Because, again, with Liljegren, I think that there's a path to move off the player, and I still hope that that is what ends up happening. But I look at all the contracts in a vacuum, and I go, like, none of these are bad. Like, Stolarz is analytically solid, and, you know, I had Luke Gazdik in here who played with him and said, man, this guy's a monster. He's super athletic, and he's durable. That's kind of what you need. He's a solid lottery ticket. You didn't give up anything to get him. So I'm like, okay, fine. I just went through everything. I like them all. It's just that when I look at the roster in totality, it's hard not to feel like, I just don't know how you would ever come to the conclusion that this year's Leafs team is better than last year's Leafs team. Like how
it's
you could
not,
look.
Though.
Yeah, that's what I'm
it's
saying.
Not, I mean, maybe a little bit defensively it's better.
Yeah, it is. Defensively it's better. I just
the improvements defensively are outweighed by the what you've lost up front.
Right. I just every year people go, why can't they score? Why can't they score? Why can't they score? And there's just a very, very real scenario here that, you know, Tavares takes another step back. People have been saying kick him out to the wing for years. You can't even think about that with what your center depth is. That's not even a plausible thought. They're so thin at center. I was not for the Kadri trade. Like, that started to get some, I don't think any real rumblings to Toronto, but people started to discuss it, right? Like, would you trade for Kadri? And the Leafs are so thin up front that I went, yeah, you know what? Maybe. Yeah, I make it work. I don't know. Take another old guy on the books and have all the Calgary players, get all of Tree Living's guys over here. I don't see the vision for down the middle or how this team's going to score come playoff time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I wondered about, you know, Henrique. There was rumors about, you know, he ended up only getting $3 million. I wonder if there were some bargain buys that they could have got at the end there if they didn't commit on Ekman-Larsson, maybe. Mm. So, but they would have had to probably get more creative and move. I mean, there's not even a lot of money to move out. You know, Kampf would have been the guy. Or, you know, you commit to sending Reeves down and you try and free up some money on the edges. I mean, if you could somehow disappear that Kampf contract and get really aggressive with what you're doing, then maybe you got $3 million to spend on another forward. Mm. But is that, I mean, even that's not going to be transformative. You're right. I mean, they're thin at 3C.
Yeah.
It feels like it has to be Domi right now.
Yeah. I don't know how you're not looking. And the weird thing is that I think Domi is fine as 3C in a pinch. Right? It's okay. But that to me is not your long-term solution. Your long-term solution is trying to find him on the wing. But if he's on the wing, I don't think that you're playing Marner there and you're not letting Marner drive your own line. And it makes this weird imbalance that you saw last year with the wingers where you go, well, you need another guy. You need another centerman to play with the wingers that you have. And I don't like it. That's my main thing. That's the whole takeaway from all of this is don't hate the signings in a vacuum. Understand some of the constraints the Leafs are working with here. It's okay, I guess, to not want to let players walk for free. When it comes to the Liljegren contract, nothing I thought was egregious. But overall, it was just free agency day is just a reminder of what this team's philosophy is. The idea that fans and members of the media, whatever, people who watch this team, who want to see them succeed, think, hey, you know, it's pretty clear you got to make a change here, and that they did another year where there was no significant change. And I know Marner, the whole story is that he wants to play it out here in Toronto, and so maybe the Leafs didn't approach him. But I would have thought that the organization was going to have a bit of a heavier hand with him, that there was going to be some kind of at least report or understanding that the Leafs put it to him in a certain way. And the only thing that we've heard is that they're tendering him a contract extension, like that they're going to try to work out a deal. Did you hear Liljegren? Or you, of course you did. When he spoke, he's like, the Leafs were easy to work with. I'm like, that's the last thing I want to hear, is the Leafs are easy to work with. And I know it's just a guy trying to gas up the front office. But man, oh man, just for all that bluster at that media conference to be like, where did you land up? Well, we're offering Mitch tens of millions of dollars, and we gave everybody a fair contract, and nothing seemed hard.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the MO of this front. I agree with you. I think the Marner situation, like, it was pretty clear that they wanted to do something, and they just didn't feel like it was there to do. Mm. You know, I think they looked around the league and tried to find something that they could bring to Marner, and I don't think it was there. So that's probably, I haven't heard personally from the front office that they're looking at extension, but the fact that it's floating out there is probably them just thinking, like, what are our options here? Mm-hmm. You know, now their options are down to, you can't trade them because of the no move. So their options are walk for nothing, mm-hmm. one of the best players at least in the regular season,
yeah.
walk for nothing, or give them a huge extension. You know, and so it's, they, again, we've been in this place on this show a few times.
They literally had to make this last offseason with William Nylander.
They had to make this decision with Marner last year. That was the time to make it. And if you don't make the decision because you're paralyzed or afraid or whatever, then you end up here and it's the bad place.
Yeah. It's hilarious too, because they're going to go into the regular season. And what do you think Mitch Marner is going to do in the regular season? What do you think the talk is going to be throughout the entire first 3 months?
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
You have to re-sign this guy. His leverage is increasing. And then maybe come, when did Nylander sign? Was it January?
January, yeah.
Come January, Leafs have upped their offer to Mitch Marner. Full no move. Or maybe Elliot and I were talking about it yesterday, and he said maybe they try to get the end of the contract where there's a way out. He compared it to Trouba. I went, I don't think that's what Leaf fans are looking for, is, hey, Mitch Marner's going to get an 8-year contract extension, 7-year contract extension, but don't worry. There's a no move, limited no move in year 6. Like, nice.
So you just keep punting until you get there, and then you can finally, finally do something. It'll be time for change.
Yeah.
6 years from now.
For sure. Yeah, like when guys retire.
You and I'll be in the old folks home, and we'll be doing this show, and we'll
This is the one piece of the Marner thing that I haven't been able to put together is, okay, so it's clear that they didn't feel like their best course of action was to get tough with him, which, again, I don't get. If you had a realistic chance of really moving off of him, then you probably had to get tough, but they decided, nope, that's not what we're going to do. We're going to take the offers, field the offers, open it up to league, let them come to us, and as you mentioned, if something great comes along, we'll bring it to his camp. By all accounts, in terms of what has been out there, no one has reported that such a deal was ever brought to the Marner camp, like the type of trade that maybe his group would have accepted and the Leafs would have liked. What I don't get is why teams wouldn't be offering anything of consequence for Mitch Marner. Like, we just saw this in free agency, and I know that these are minor assets that got flipped, right, for Tanev's rights, and then what was Gensel, a third? To get his negotiator, it was a little bit of a higher acquisition cost for him. But either way, the point is you get to free agency, and all of a sudden these highly talented players are so freaking coveted. And everyone keeps replying to me going, well, he only has 1 year left on his deal. He only has 1 year left on his deal. What do you teams don't want to do that. They'll just go in free agency. And you're like, yeah, but the price of or the addition of having a guy of that caliber on your roster in a contract year, like, that does help you win now. That is a huge additive. There's no way that the Leafs were ever going to win this trade from a talent-for-talent standpoint. And I don't get why other GMs around the league weren't a little bit more aggressive for Marner, that we didn't hear. All we heard was that Vegas would give up a couple of their pending UFA defensemen, and basically it was, and then some little squeaks about how Nashville was really interested in him, which I do believe was true because they went out and were super aggressive with talent and free agency. But if you're just looking at this stuff, like, okay, so you're afraid to give Mitch Marner this contract extension, but then what, Nashville's going to use up all their cap on Marchessault and Stamkos? I think Mitch Marner would be a better use of that kind of money. I would be willing to give up trade assets to try to get him on the books and have him in for a year over those two guys. I just don't understand the reservation around the league to really offer the Leafs something of at least serious consideration.
Well, I mean, I think there's the value of Marner isn't as high as, I mean, it's, who wants to add a small player who hasn't performed in the playoffs, who makes $11 million and who wants more on an extension? I mean, all of those are tough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's part of the reality. And the Nashville thing, you and I talked about that. We were texting. I was like, what's Nashville going to give up? Like, it's not a team that's drowning. And like, there's not a lot of, they can't subtract from their blue line. You know, they had to add because they traded away McDonough. So there's not, you look at that roster and there's not a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like some of the mock trades and everything that have been going around the last 2 months since the Leafs stopped playing. There's been Marner mock. And I think people are dreaming when they look at some of the things they think they're going to get for Marner. Like, it's just not reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're going to have to lose that trade. But at the end of the day, I don't think Marner has any intention of waving. So yeah, I think none of this matters. Like, he's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. At first I thought it was just posturing. Cause I'm like, why would they ever put it out there? Like, hey, we would be willing to leave. Right. Like, we're considering it. If you're the camp and you say, you put it out there, right, that you would be willing to go somewhere else, I think fans would originally go, oh, he gets it. But then you go, no, he's given up on the market, right? He's put that out there. He's over it. As soon as you do that, it's done here. So no, you can't say that. Plus still your best point of leverage is this team. It's clear. If teams weren't willing to trade for you now and put together serious trade packages, then what option do you have in free agency that's going to be better than the Leafs? Right? Like, they can still give you the extra year. They can still give you the most amount of money. They give you the opportunity that you want the most, which is to stay in Toronto. Like, why would he budge? There's no incentive other than he doesn't like the social media pressure and the way that media talks about him and that a lot of the fan base feels towards him. But he probably knows, like, if he's going to bet on himself and he thinks about the caliber of player he is, which he is, yes, the playoff stuff. He needs one good playoff run for everyone to go, hey, we're all stupid for thinking this about Mitch Marner. Look at how it flipped with William Nylander. He always had diehard defenders, but now William Nylander is viewed as, you know, Jean Beliveau here. You know, he's...
I don't know about that.
Yeah, he's just... Well, people are like, he's Mr. Clutch in the playoffs. He's Mr. Games 5, 6, 7. He tried to...
I don't know if they have anyone that's clutch in the playoffs right now.
I'm just saying that
maybe Chris Tanev.
He was 100% a whipping boy in this market, right? Like, you would agree on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now what? Like, the contract extension, when he went through that and he sat out half a season, people couldn't believe it. They were sick of William Nylander. Then he signed that contract. People thought it was too much money. And then a year later, they were like, holy crap, this is the sweetheart deal. He ends up having a couple of good performances in the postseason. And it's like, he's one of the most popular guys in the entire city now. Like, the uncles love Nylander for the most part now.
I wonder what Nylander would have got in free agency. Like, I wonder if he would have got 11.5, because you look at like the Gensel contract and the Reinhardt deal, and nobody was signing for 11.5 in free agency this year, even with all the money in the system. So that's another one where I look at it and I'm like, maybe they should have played this out a little bit longer with Nylander.
I still think Chicago would have done it and they would have gone to that number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was always the understanding of Chicago, is just looming, going, we cannot wait to try to spend all this cap space on an elite guy to put next to Bedard. Like, I think they would have gone up. Like, that would have been there. I can't imagine how they would have evaluated that and said, we're not going to do it. Like, it makes no sense.
I guess the play I would, if I was the Leafs, would be, but then it's out of your hands, it would be to just play it out and go to July 1 and say to Nylander, we'll match whatever offer you get. And if you can get 11.5, then great, we'll match that. So, anyway. I mean, that's where some of their cap space went, right? Like, Nylander got a raise from 6.9 to 11.5 this year. I mean, that's the cap around the league went up $4.5 million, but Nylander's contract went up $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, there wasn't a whole bunch of extra money in the kitty for the Leafs this year.
No.
They spent it.
I got to say, though, that lesson should be there for the Leafs when it comes to the Marner situation, is that you know, apparently, again, they're reportedly going to offer him a contract extension. But to me, I just don't understand how it's not the most favorable terms for you. Like, that you're saying, no, we'll give you this money, but you're not getting a no-move clause, even though everyone else has got one. That's the position that we're taking here. We need some control back, and this is what we're going to negotiate. You can have all the money in the world, but it's not coming without the price tag of you also getting control of your destination. So if you're willing to do that, cool, we'll sign that thing today. If not, do that same thing. Walk them to free agency. See what the offers are like. Because if this guy really is so... He's so reluctant to play in some different markets, and that this situation has taught the Leafs anything is that they should know they have some of the leverage here now. Like, he doesn't want to go to every single spot, and not every team in the NHL is bending over backwards to get him. And so even if he does have a dynamite season, I think you walk him to free agency now and you try to stare him down. Maybe you bring him back, but you cannot do the same thing that you did with Nylander and go, well, Mitch Marner's scoring. He's on 110-point pace in the regular season, so we got to pay him the same thing as Nylander. No, that has to be off the table.
Well, look at the Reinhardt situation, right? No one would have thought he would have signed for that. It goes all the way to July 1, and then they get it done, and it's a great number for them. You know, it's the exact number where he should be. It's not the 57-goal career year number. It's what Reinhardt is. So, and I think this all goes back to what we were talking about. I think the Leafs front office has got to be, they got to be cutthroat. I mean, the league's getting more cutthroat. We're seeing, like, what happened with Tampa. We see what Vegas is doing year after year. I mean, that's going to be the way in a hard cap league. And if your front office isn't doing some of those same things, then you're going to get left behind.
Yeah. You got to be cutthroat. They gave Max Domi 4 years. They gave Chris Tanev 6 years. They gave OEL 4. Then they, gave Timothy Liljegren more money than he probably would have gotten because they didn't want to have a tough negotiation. And they didn't really even seriously approach Mitch Marner. I was like, got to be cutthroat. I don't think that the spots are going to change here. Okay, before you go, I got to ask you about Kipper's captaincy report. Have you heard anything on this? He talked about the potential for the Leafs to strip John Tavares of the captaincy and give it to Austin Matthews.
It doesn't surprise me. I have not heard that coming from in the organization, but at some point they're going to want to give it to Matthews. So the question is, do they do it this fall or do they wait another year to when Tavares' contract's up and do it? But it's going to happen. And, you know, Matthews wants it and he's the face of the franchise and you're trying to keep him. You know, he's got 4 years on his deal and, you know, it's going to be another thing that you can say to Matthews, like, you matter to us. And I think it makes sense. I think it's time to turn the page, and it hasn't really worked out with Tavares as the captain. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say, you know, he's the strong, silent type captain. He's not really, really tight with any of the other core players on the team. And I think it's time for a change. So we'll see. I mean, that would be pretty cutthroat if they make that change. That would be a hard thing to navigate just in terms of the attention and everything that would be coming. So the question I think they have to weigh is it worth making that change this fall?
That's why I'm a little torn on it. I go, listen, if he's going to be the captain eventually, why not do it now, right? Just because, what, so you're going to get the free agency, do the same thing? But man, oh man, in this offseason where there's going to be so much scrutiny and discussion about what this team can and can't do, to put that on Tavares' shoulders is a tough one, right? Like, to have him show up there for media days, and it's, how do you feel about losing the captaincy to Austin Matthews? And then Matthews even having to be the guy where you trot him out there and go, look, be excited about the new captain, as people are pissed off and they don't really feel like it's a meaningful period of change for this team. Ugh, just feels a little uncomfortable. The other part of it, too, is I think you really do need to gauge what Tavares' position is on a contract extension, because we just talked about it throughout the course of this interview. They don't have any center depth. And again, while he probably projects out as a winger at some point in his career, having him on this roster versus losing him for nothing and then trying to find a suitable replacement and leaving yourself with David Kampf, Austin Matthews, and Max Domi down the middle. Oh, and sorry, Fraser Minton. I don't think that's where you want to be. So ideally, the scenario is that he is taking that Stamkos deal, the one that Tampa offered, where they're like, here's no money over a long time, take it or leave it. and that's the position he gets put in. And if you're a Leaf fan, you're hoping he takes it.
Yeah, I mean, I would put that on the table.
Yeah,
what was it, 8 years, $3 million or something like that for Stamkos?
Yeah.
And I think I mean, how the perception of Tavares in Toronto, I think, would change immediately
rapidly
if he signs a deal like that, because all of a sudden it's, you know, he can, at that money, he can be your third line center, and he absolutely can outplay that money and at that position. And he becomes a net positive, as opposed to the way he's been talked about the last couple of years with being a negative with the number on his contract. And if he really wants to stay here, you give up the captaincy, you sign that deal, you leave some money on the table, and that's how you become the hometown hero.
Yeah. See, I would actually, even in free agency, I would go, listen, if you take that Stamkos deal, the one that he was offered by Tampa, you take that deal, we'll let you keep the captaincy. You know, you keep the C and you get that, or you walk and it's gone, or you try to negotiate with us and it's gone this year. Something like that. Give him a little tone. Anyway, I hope that there's a little bit more excitement this summer. I hope that, there's a fun Robertson trade or a fun Liljegren trade, or we get some kind of mumbling or murmur about something with this team, because, as it stands today, not too excited. James Myrtle, Senior Managing Editor of The Athletic. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, JD.
Yeah, cheers. All right, let's take a quick break, and I'll come back. Hit on a couple of things that I wasn't able to get to during free agency day yesterday. Canada soccer qualifying, Poatan's dominance, and, the end of the Splash Brothers.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How badass is that? If you're listening on the podcast, playing Poatan's entrance music. Sepultura. What's the name of the song by Sepultura?
It's Sorry.
Yeah, It's Sorry. It's on the album Roots. Sepultura rules. UFC has a habit of trying to oversell their fighters as, oh, this guy is the man. Oh, this is the next one. This is the person that is going to really move the needle for the casuals, because they're always hoping for that, right? They're always trying to recapture the Ronda Rousey level popularity, the Conor McGregor level popularity, right? The person that everyone wants to tune in for, the name that people know. And I don't think Alex Pereira is quite there yet, but I'm fully bought in. I've always been dubious of this guy because he came out of nowhere. Well, I don't want to say nowhere, but he was advanced age and he was a kickboxer, and we thought, okay, he's going to fight Israel Adesanya, and it's going to be a UFC fight, though, and Izzy should be able to take him. This guy's his boogeyman, but ultimately, Israel Adesanya's at a completely different phase of his career, and nope, bang, he's out. Poatan wins. Israel Adesanya gets a win over him, and then I start to think, like, oh, okay, you know, like maybe this guy wasn't lucky. He's obviously the man, but that ultimately, what is the ceiling of this fighter? Moves up a weight class, and I go, man, he's going to get wrestled. Like, he's the wrestler's going to take him out. Nope. He just keeps starching guys. And now we're at the point, I know when I feel a fighter is just so incredibly special, it's because of those moments, the walkouts. And right now, before this fight, his opponent, Jiří Procházka, was with the media talking about how he wanted Alex Pereira to agree to not using rituals before the fight. And I went, dude, this is over. My brother and I put a heavy wager down on Alex Pereira. I think at like minus 162, not even that crazy of a price, because we went, wait, you think that he's got witch magic on his side and you're going into this fight? And when he came out and that music was playing and he was doing the walk down the octagon, I believed in the spirits. I felt the fear of Jiří Procházka. That stare down, there's something about him that is mystical. He is terrifying. He is exhilarating. He is, to me, right now, absolutely and unquestionably the face of the UFC. And he is now, without a doubt, the guy I want to see fight the most. Every single time he is going to be on a card, that will be the card I am most interested in. If you want to know, hey, JD, who do you want to... I want to see Alex Pereira again and again and again and again. And he loves to fight. And he loves challenges. And he loves the crowd. He is just the epitome of a gladiator. He steps out there. He looks exactly like the scariest man on planet Earth. Like, if you saw that guy stare at you, you'd pee. I think if he stared at you for literally more than a casual glance, you would get so nervous, your knees would knock together and you'd fall to the floor. He's a terrifying human being. And then he just goes out there and he just right away boots Prochazka in the head and cleans him out. It's done. And he's talking about going up to heavyweight. And John Jones, the reason why I said Jones instead of Israel Adesanya is that John Jones put on his Instagram that it would be one of the biggest fights in UFC history, if not the biggest fight in UFC history. And I went, I got to tell you, I need it now. We've always missed out on the John Jones mega fights. We've wanted them ever since, like, Machida. Putting that one together at the end of John Jones's career would be phenomenal. It's far replaced the Francis Ngannou thing in terms of what I would most like to see. Give me those two guys. Give me the two guys that I wonder are two of the scariest that I've ever seen in the UFC fighting for a genuine opportunity to be the GOAT. Because that's the thing that's on the table for Pereira now, is the way that he's winning. You go stack up his resume versus Habib's. He's doing it different. It doesn't feel as dominant because Habib did it in a way where it was like he just out-wrestled you and controlled you and just beat you down. But God, this guy is terrifying. And I am enamored by him. He's now unquestionably one of my favorite athletes. And yes, anytime I need to get pumped up, I'm listening to that Sepultura song. Quickly, Canada Soccer qualified. I didn't get an opportunity to talk about this because, yeah, it was free agency day yesterday and it just felt kind of misplaced. But I just wanted to say this. They only get one goal with basically two games up a man. And there's some consternation. I was texting with some people where they go, I don't know how to feel about this. I don't know. What's the reaction that you're supposed to have to this? And the reaction is you're supposed to be happy. Okay? Canada Soccer earned those cards. None of those were, I thought, all overly dubious. They scored a big goal against Peru that they needed to. And in my opinion, that was a team that has been very used to not playing with any expectations. And now when we've seen them play with expectations, whether it was the second game of the World Cup or these last two games of Copa, they've looked a little tight. They haven't looked great, and they haven't been their best selves. I thought that they controlled play, obviously, against Peru a little bit more, but that wasn't a dominant enough performance. And certainly against Chile, you know, there were times where you went, are they down a man? Which was a little spooky, I think, for a Canadian soccer fan. But this is good. This is a development that we were talking about. This is supposed to be the stuff that we talked about with Sid, where everything is gravy. This is what the gravy is. You're getting an extra game with high stakes and with expectation back on your shoulders. You got two games that are going to really help this group prepare mentally for what the pressure is going to be in the World Cup. And if you would have told me that, because what, they had two friendlies before this, one against France where they get the draw, and then they lost to the Netherlands. So you're saying you got France, the Netherlands, Chile, Peru, and Argentina. And you come out of that with two losses, two draws, and a win. I think you should be pretty happy with just the way that the program is trending and the ways that these guys have acquitted themselves. And so, yes, you talk about process versus results in sports, but to me, this one is just I'm throwing the style points aside, and I'm just saying I'm really grateful to get to see Canada Soccer play one more big high-level match against an opponent where it really means something for this team. Anyways, I'll talk about Clay with you tomorrow. We'll see you then.